40-30.
Two good forehands from Haddad Maia to open up that court, steadying herself. It's still looking a little bit tight on her side, but she's forcing herself, willing herself through it.
Fourth match point, a first in this game. 3 hours, 50 minutes on the clock. Haddad Maia bouncing up and down, looks across, looks down. The stage is set. 6-5, match point. She reaches up and she serves. She puts the serve in. The backhand spins into court. The inside out forehand, the stretching Cerebes Torment. Surely this is it. Inside in goes the Brazilian, and she's done it! After nearly 4 hours of action, Beatriz Haddad Maia wins through in three to reach her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. I don't think she can quite believe what she's done. There is an exhausted embrace between the two at the net. But it is the Brazilian who marches through to the quarterfinals.
A tired but heartfelt salute by Beatriz Haddad Maia to the crowd, who just witnessed it, a big moment for her. I mean, a big fight. All the credit in the world to Sara Cerebes Tormo for making that the match that it was. She could have, you know, been happy to have made the round of 16 after being down so quickly in that first set. Fought her way through, fought her way back, took that opening set, fought back again multiple times, saving match points. She made Beatriz Haddad Maia earn that. She's earned this ovation as well.
She has everyone on their feet. We're going to hear from the Brazilian shortly, and then after the Brazilian, you will hear from Simon and Eleanor. As the first match has finished on Susan Longland. Where are we? We're 2-1 on serve. Jarry Casper Ruud. There's no rush. We'll just wait till we get into the interview, and then we can have a little listen to that. Fabrice Santoro is waiting. Beatriz Haddad Maia is just saying take your time, I'm going to wait for you. She's clearing up her bits and pieces, she's getting everything in order. Thank you very much for the Haribo to go towards my boys party bags. Thank you very much, Courtney. I look forward to having pizza at some stage. Very excited about that. That was a moment. Haddad Maia just getting herself together. There is no rush, she's just having a final drink. And then I think Fabrice Santoro is saying, are you ready? She said, you know what? I think I am. She'll face Ons Jabeur in the last eight, her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. It's going to be very interesting to hear from her. And that's what we're going to do now. Fabrice Santoro is speaking with your winner, Beatriz Haddad Maia.
Beatriz, congratulations. Fantastic match. 3 hours. 51 minutes is the longest women's match this year. You are in the quarterfinal of Roland Garros and the first Brazilian girl to be in the quarterfinal of any Grand Slam since 1968. Congratulations. Tell us your emotion.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank everybody who came to support and enjoy the match today, especially the Brazilians. Muito obrigada pela força de hoje. I think the emotion were there for both of us. As I said, the last match, when we play big matches against big players in big tournaments, in we played almost 4 hours, so it's not only about tennis, it's a lot of things that comes through our minds. But I was trying to give one more chance for me, because I knew that I was missing a few shots that I was trying to find myself. But I'm very happy and proud that I did not give up, and I was trying to push until my limit, and I think I deserve it because of that.
You served for the first set, and then you were down 7-6, 3-0, 40-15. Was it difficult for you to stay positive and to find a new strategy to come back in the match?
Yeah, I think the key is to try to play every single point. Doesn't matter the score. I was 5-1 down in the last round, so 3-love was not that bad. And I tried to think in the positive way, try to think that if I'm feeling nervous, my opponent also is feeling. So my coach, he sent me an interview from Djokovic, and Djokovic told about the nerves. And if Djokovic feel the nerves, who is me? So it's normal, and we need to accept. We need to be humble and improve when we have the pressure.
Beatrice, you're born in 1996. There's one Brazilian player we love here in Paris, in Roland Garros. He won here in 1997, 2000, and 2001. Of course, I talk about Guga. You grew up with Guga. Are you in contact? Did you ever play with him? Or did he try to give you a few tips?
Yeah, Guga is an idol for me. When he won the first time, I was 1 year old. But yeah, for sure, we grew up playing on clay, hearing his name. And he's a very nice guy. He's a very important person for us. I got inspired by him as well, and I had the chance to meet him also when I practiced in the south of Brazil. So yeah, I'm very happy that he supports us as well, and yeah, he is my idol.
Once again, congratulations, Beatrice. Have a good rest, and we wish you the best for your quarterfinal. Mesdames et messieurs, Beatrice Haddad-Maia.
Well, that's quite interesting, wasn't it, with Beatrice Haddad-Maia saying she was given a video by Novak Djokovic, or a coach sent it to her, just saying, explaining that everybody suffers from nerves, and it's just about dealing with them. And if he can handle it, then if he feels nerves, then she's going to too, and just accept that and deal with them. And she did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was it's always interesting to hear players own up to having nerves and talking about it publicly. And accepting the fact, as you said, that they happen to absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody is going to feel a stiff arm, an arm like a ton of bricks, as a player put it to me once, when you're going up to serve for a match, any match, and probably at any level you're going to feel like that. And it's about how you handle it and how you deal with it. And sometimes what's difficult is that it's your body going through it. We focus so much on the mind, but actually it's what it does to your body. If it makes your legs feel like jelly, and you feel like you can't move very well suddenly, if you feel like you can't generate power on your serve because your arm is literally, in some cases, shaking, and sometimes I've seen players get emotional. Do you remember Goran Ivanišević serving for the match in 2001 at Wimbledon? On centre court with tears streaming down his face. So it's can be an incredibly emotionally challenging moment.
Yeah, it really can. I mean, nerves affect people in all sorts of different ways, but every single tennis player, every sports person suffers from nerves, and it's just about how you deal with it and how you learn to embrace it, really, because it's normal. It's a good thing. It shows you care. And Beatrice Haddad-Maia has had trouble finishing matches in the past, but she's come through it today. She won 6-7, 6-3, 7-5 in 3 hours 51 minutes, which is the longest women's match of the year so far, not surprisingly. A lot of hard work done there, and she's through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, she had to take some deep breaths to get there, but that will probably stand her in good stead going forward, because having served for, arguably the biggest match of her career and got through it, that could be a big step forward.
Yeah, she's through to play on Jabeur in the quarterfinals. That'll be on Wednesday. As we switch our attention back to court, Philippe Chatrier. Casper Ruud has a 2-sets-to-love lead on Nicolas Jarry, 7-6, 7-5. It's 2-all in the third set, and Ruud is at love 30 on the Jarry serve. And it's not been easy for Ruud. He was up early in the first set, but got pegged back. But is in control, and he's just going about his business very quietly here again at Roland Garros this year. Got to the final last year and doing a good job. Jarry serves out wide with ace. Lee is in touch saying what a fabulous match that was between Beatrice Haddad-Maia and Sara Cerebes-Tormo. Yeah, it's one of those matches that when you win it, it's absolutely elated, and when you lose, totally gutted. But part of a big match, a big occasion, and good effort by both. Jarry serving, little wind flicking his shirt as Ruud mishits the backhand return. It's 30 all.
Konda.
Jarry's team getting behind him.
This is a match that Ruud has really had to dig out.
Yeah.
He's never really been in trouble in it, but it's not been easy, as you said. It's been hard work. He's had to graft today.
He's never been in total control, even though he's been ahead in the scoreline for most of the match. Smash from Jarry doesn't put it away, but he does second time round. And he's got a game point to go up 3-2 in this third set. Seeing as they were discussing pizza, where do you stand on pizza?
Well, I tend not to stand on it. It's very difficult. Then you tread it into the carpet, Simon.
Good point.
Ba-boom.
Here all week.
Seafood? No.
Absolutely not. Or tuna. My brother-in-law always puts tuna on a pizza. I know.
That's a bit off.
I know.
I don't mind a seafood pizza.
Awful.
Sometimes.
Seafood and cheese. Would you eat seafood and cheese?
Not together.
Well, but that's exactly what you're advocating, Simon.
It depends on the pizza. In Italy, you can get pizza without cheese.
That's true.
You can get pizza without a tomato base. You can get almost anything.
As someone who's allergic to mozzarella, I quite often have to have conversations in pizza restaurants about how to have a pizza without cheese or without at least that sort of cheese.
Yeah, they call it Piazza Bianca in Rome, where you can mix it all up, do it yourself. You just have the base and you go from there. No tomato base. And you put whatever you want on it. Jerry's held for 3-2.
Chicken, I think, is the most contentious point. I know we've had some discussion of butter chicken.
No, that's disgusting.
Chicken of any kind on a pizza is, to me, fundamentally wrong.
I mean, I can think, you know, in student days, you'd eat anything, wouldn't you? So,
yeah, but you eat anything on toast,
wouldn't you?
That's what I mean,
you'd eat anything.
So, yeah, fried cat on toast, if that's what was in the cupboard. You didn't have any money.
Obviously, I wouldn't eat eggs, but apart from that. So you probably have a chicken, whatever, pizza, chicken special, but generally, I like things like anchovies and
salt.
Do you call that seafood or not?
No. Anchovies, but I like that sort of salt on a
capers.
Pizza. Capers.
Yeah, exactly.
Olives.
I like olives, mushrooms, parma ham, that kind of thing. Cheese, obviously.
And now I'm going to want a pizza for the rest of the afternoon.
Got one in the fridge. Might have one tonight. Could be a good idea. I think it's a quattro formaggi. Pretty simple.
That'll be your four cheeses. I'm here to translate any of your language needs. Just ask.
Any of your pizza requirements?
Well, I'm not, like I said, with being allergic to mozzarella, I'm probably not your go-to for pizza questions.
No, exactly. So you can butt out.
It's no need to be rude, Simon. Really.
Well, let's keep going today. What else is going on around the grounds? But soon we will have Holger Rune in his fourth round battle. He is playing Francisco Cerúndolo of Argentina. That's the next match on court. Suzanne Longlet. There's a lot of junior tennis out there today. We were talking a lot about the juniors this morning with Marcus Buckland. Actually, the number one seed in the girls' event is in a bit of a battle with Melissa Erkan of Turkey. Sara Saito of Japan won the first on the tiebreak, lost the second. It's 1-2 in the third. We interviewed her yesterday, and plenty of doubles and mixed doubles also happening. Desiree Kravchuk and Demi Skurs of Holland dropped the first set to Shea and Wang, China, and Taipei. On the tiebreak, Shea and Wang are one love up in the second.
How much has that favourite in the juniors played on clay? Because I often think sometimes in juniors you do have situations where someone has a high rank, but actually because they're all learning their trade effectively, they haven't necessarily played on the surface. Happens quite a lot at Wimbledon.
Yes.
Where they just haven't got grass courts in their country, for example, or have just never seen one, and that's their first experience.
Mira Andreeva, of course, who got to the third round here, lost to Coco Gauff. She's never played on grass in her life. She doesn't know yet whether she's going to have her visa into the country in time. But if she does, it'll be Wimbledon where she plays her first competitive match. So that's fun.
It's quite something, isn't it?
But talking of Andreeva, this is with Sarah Saito of Japan. She actually, I was talking to Aki, a Japanese journalist, yesterday. She was giving me a bit of background about her. She was lucky enough to be given some financial backing by somebody who, a CEO of a medical company in Japan, which happens quite often, apparently. And that enabled her to travel around Europe playing junior tournaments. So she does have actually some experience of clay, more than normally that you would expect for some of these players who come from non-traditional clay countries. So that's good for her. But she also has played. She's 16 years old, like Andreeva, and she's played Andreeva twice, beat her once. And basically, the time she beat her, that made her believe that she could be a top player. As Nicolas Jarry thumps a forehand into the open court to take him to 15-30 on the Casper Ruud serve. Big hitting from the Argentinian.
I think that 15-40, two break points against the Ruud serve.
Jarry won their last meeting just before Roland Garros in Geneva. Merci. First person to beat Ruud in Switzerland. Bizarre stat. So he's got the form.
It's a bit incongruous, isn't it?
He played Geneva before and won it, and then not played anywhere else. So Ruud with a couple of break points to face. Yeah, I wonder how many other players are unbeaten in a country.
Didn't Andy Murray have a ridiculous record against French players specifically?
Talking about that this morning.
For quite
like
a long time.
34 players. Oh, Jarry, so close to getting the break there. He had Ruud beaten at the net on a pass. Wrong-footed him with a cross-court pass, but it just fell short. Yeah, it was in the 30s at one stage. He lost to Joe Wilfried Tsonga in the first round of the Australian Open in 2009, and for about 10 years, never lost to, 8-9 years, never lost to a French person. But yeah, in a country, that would be a good one. I wonder if that's happened. As Ruud serves, still break point, ball for the forehand drops short from Ruud and actually causes Jarry a few issues in getting forward to the ball, and he didn't make it, and the ball goes long. It's juice.
Well, it can happen at tournaments, can't it? A tournament actually ceases to be for whatever reason, you know, the sanction gets moved to another event in another city.
True. That's true. I'm trying to think. I wonder, it might have happened back in, you know, in the olden days. Tennis, someone, or we've seen, like, Nadal winning 10-plus Barcelona's and Monte Carlo's 14 times here, but of course he has lost here a couple of times. Double fault from Casper Ruud. That could be costly. It's just long. And that's another break point. Third break point chance in this game for Nicolas Jarry. On another beautiful day here at Roland Garros. Incredible weather.
There are clouds, but they are minimal.
Yeah, one or two. Spotted around. Run! Ruud misses the first serve. Goes quiet. Second serve. Kick it to the backhand of Jarry. Short ball that Ruud can get after on the forehand, but doesn't do that much with. The backhand from Jarry into the backhand corner of Ruud, who ups the ante with a backhand that pushes Jarry way out of court, but he's back in position as he plays another backhand to the backhand corner of Ruud. He plays a short slice. Slice back from Jarry. Slice from Ruud. Now the forehand from Jarry up the line, inside in. Ruud scrambles it back into play somehow. Bounce smash at the baseline from Jarry. Has not much pace on it. He takes the pace off and it fools Ruud. And Ruud misses wide and there's a breaker serve to Nicolas Jarry.
And quite rightly getting a big round of applause for that one and raising his fist, just getting the crowd into it.
It was a smart bounce smash in the end. He didn't go for complete power, he just sort of curled it in, carved it in. And in the end, Ruud was a little bit confused and didn't know what to do with the forehand.
Yes, it was an odd shot, wasn't it? From here, I had my heart in my mouth and thought, well, that's very tentative and Ruud could hit a winner off it, but you're right, it foxed him.
It really did. So he's got a break of serve. He's got a chance now to get back into this match. Leading 4-2 in this third set, having dropped two tight sets in the opening two. 7-6, 7-5, and the back end of the net from Ruud.
We saw, didn't we, in Ruud's previous match, that he was just occasionally getting down on himself a little bit, which is really unusual for Casper Ruud. He's someone who plays without often showing too much emotion.
Yeah, I think it's stress, isn't it? It's pressure. You know, he's coming into this tournament. He's talked about it a lot. He's got a little bit of pressure on his shoulders because he got to the final last year. He's got a lot of points to defend. Feels like he needs to perform. Drop shot from Jarry is not good. Ruud up to it quickly, puts the backhand away. That drop shot landed on the service line.
Kenza.
We've seen many, many fabulous drop shots so far at this Roland Garros, and that was not one of them.
Certainly not. Pam! Pam's listening. Pam, great to have you listening. She says, I managed to be undefeated in Cuba, winning the 1991 Pan American Games, similar to the Commonwealth Games, singles, doubles and mixed. Wow.
That's a great stat.
Can't imagine there are too many people who've done that kind of thing. Actually, maybe Olympic Games winners could be, they're normally in countries that, you know, you would play in again. But it could be that kind of stat, like Seoul, for example.
Yes.
88.
Yes.
Chi-ish. Who won the women's in 88? I can't remember.
Steffi Graf?
Graf won the 84 demonstration. She did win 88, didn't she? Because it was the Golden Slam, of course. Eleanor was looking at me very stupidly. I was very stupid.
Yeah, thank
which
you.
Which I was.
Thank you for clarifying. could be true at the same time.
Good. Which I was for a moment before I remember the year. Of course, Steffi Graf doing something that no one else has done in tennis, winning all four Grand Slams and the Olympics in the same year. Amazing achievement as Ruud plays the backhand slice, trying to pass Jarry, who plays the most audacious flick of the wrist, half volley into the open court. That was a thing of beauty.
Yes, some casual brilliance from Nicolas Jarry there, hitting the ball almost behind him, and he looked like he was going for a stroll in the opposite direction and just, while I'm here, I'll just hit a winner.
I thought he was beaten by the pass. It was a good forehand pass from Ruud on the run, but Jarry just moving across to his left, little flick of the wrist. There's confidence flowing through the Chilean. 4-2, 30-15 in this third set. Big serve out wide. Ruud plays a high lofted backhand return here. Now he has to put a huge high lob up on the forehand side. Jarry's at the net. He doesn't put the first smash away, but the reply from Ruud is not good enough. And Pam. Yes, Pam, I'm sorry. I did not point out who won the Seoul Olympic women's doubles. Was that you? I think it was. Sorry, Pam. Pam Shriver, of course. Fabulous commentator these days, but also fabulous player, singles and doubles, notably with Martina Navratilova. Probably the best doubles partnership of all time.
And also possibly our favourite listener. Although yes. We love all of you.
Yes, that's true. Ruud returns on the forehand side at 40-15. Slice backhand from Ruud to the backhand of Jarry, who hits an even better slice right onto the baseline. Then he goes with a two-hander. Up the line from Ruud, though. That's more like it. Clean winner for the Norwegian.
40-30.
And Faith says, I'm undefeated at Wimbledon in women's doubles. Of course, it wasn't during the tournament, and I only played there once. Well, at least you played there, Faith. That's good. Not many people can say they played at Wimbledon.
Well, if you start bringing that in... I'm unbeaten in Section 5 singles in Kahuna Grass Court Championships in Australia.
Are you?
I am.
You're unbeaten.
Well,
how many?
I played it once. I won it once.
There you go. All right, but that was Wimbledon. This was some place that no one's ever heard of. You just said Laguna.
It's on grass. Kahuna.
Oh, Kahuna.
It's on grass. Same difference.
Yeah, same thing. Hammering backhands from Jarry towards the forehand of Ruud, but in the end, the forehand of Jarry breaks down.
I want an electric whisk.
You
want what? I want an electric hand whisk.
How is that the prize for a tennis team?
And $25.
Have you still got it?
No, I left it in Australia. I'm not sure how long it worked for.
I'll tell you the worst prize I ever got in a minute.
Merci.
Jarry serves at deuce. 4-2 to the good in this third set. Two sets to love. Casper Ruud leads. Serve volley from Jarry comes in, backhand volley. Oh, he dumps it in the bottom of the net. Was trying to hit a little drop volley and just took all the pace off, and the ball just stopped stone dead, almost on his racket. And it's break back point. Well, you can see what he was trying to do, but didn't do it very well. And Not a bad play, though, the serve and volley at that moment. Got a very makeable volley and should have made it, really. They're underway on long lane between Holger Rune and Francisco Cerundolo. We'll keep you updated with that and all of the rest of the action around the Roland Garros grounds. Big, big serve from Jarry. Flat serve out wide. Finds the sideline. Rude wants to have a look at it. I think he's just wandering up towards it to stand on it so that there'll be a mark next time. That was a very well-placed serve from Jarry. He needed that. Yeah, I won a... I did win some tennis tournaments, but I won a chess tournament when I was 12 or 11. And I beat five players in a row. It's like a sort of a cumulative thing. By the end of it, you play someone else who's played four in a row and then you win. It was a county championship, so pretty reasonable. And I got a polystyrene coffee cup with the words Huntingdonshire chess champion written on it in biro. I was so disgusted, I threw it in the bin. Jarry would be pretty upset with that forehand too. Way over the baseline and Rude pressuring in and pushing for this breakback. I mean, I think that's quite insulting.
I think that defines the phrase rubbish prize.
Yeah, it certainly was in the rubbish pretty quickly. So, Jarry with work to do. Break point down. Second break point is faced in this... third set, in the seventh game of the third set. He serves down the middle to the trying to get into the body of Rude, but Rude's miles back in the court, and I think Jarry has missed the forehand, or has he? Rude thinks it's out. He's circled the mark, or semi-circled it, and the umpire comes down. He says yes. Jarry has his hands on the net, leaning over, but he's given back the break. And as has happened throughout this match, when one person has taken control or moved ahead just a little bit, the other one has hit back straight away, and usually it's Rude. This time the Norwegian gets back on track on serve.
So can you beat Simon's terrible prize of winning a polystyrene cup with biro inscription on it? If you can, tweet us at radio_RG. You can email us frenchopenradio@fft.fr. I was quite pleased with my electric hand whisk.
That's good.
I mean, it wasn't top of the range.
Clearly, as you left it there. Did you just leave it deliberately?
Well, I was travelling back to the UK and I didn't need one in the UK, so I donated it.
I mean, there's always a use. There's always a need for a hand whisk occasionally. In the kitchen, are you suggesting that you don't do any cooking?
I'm suggesting that I already had one. I don't need multiple hand whisks.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, see if you can beat our worst prizes ever.
I mean, it could be for tennis. There might not be. There might be for something else. Simon's was for a chess tournament because he was one of the cool kids at school.
See, that is such a stereotype. That's almost bigotry, I think.
I'm only saying that because I am so terrible at chess.
No, you're not. You're saying it because you thought chess was a geeky sport for kids.
Well, I have adopted that position based on my own inability to play it.
You saw all the chess nerds and you thought, you're all nerds, you can't do anything else. I played football, I played tennis, I played cricket. I just happened to be reasonable at chess back then. Not now. Can't remember anything. Can't remember any of the openings, all that stuff that you need to know. Also, thinking ahead more than one move is quite difficult these days. Ace from Casper Ruud to start the eighth game. Trails 3-4. Rune holding serve in the first game on court, Suzanne Lorrain. And the top seed in the girls' event is in a bit of trouble. Sara Saito 4-2 down against Melissa Erkan of Turkey. It's probably Erchan, actually. But Saito was 4-1 down. She's got a game back, so maybe still in the hunt. You never know.
Of course, I've got a movie title for her. Out of Saito.
Yes, that's very good. If she gets good. Oh, you can have that.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
That's all right. A pleasure.
That's the conversational equivalent of a polystyrene cup with biro written on it.
The only thing that could have made that polystyrene cup prize worse was if there was still a bit of coffee in with a cigarette butt half in it.
That was the second
prize.
I think
they probably removed it just then. Rude serving at 30 love. Turned down the middle from Jarry, who just is pummeling the ball. But that is a beauty of a backing up the line again from Rude. He's hit a few of those in the last couple of games. and gives him 3 game points. I was waiting for this kind of thing. Manny and sunny Monmouth in South Wales. Talking of stats, here's one for you. In all the times I've played Djokovic, Murray and Federer, I've never lost. I'm also undefeated at all 4 Grand Slams.
Yeah. Can I just say, Simon and I always make the final.
Yeah.
Carol Ken.
One of us wins. We don't make any mistakes from up here in the commentary box in terms of hitting the ball. Lots of verbal mistakes, obviously.
You speak for yourself.
Well, that's the hard bit. 40-15, Rude. Still a couple of game points to level up at 4-all. He serves with his headband prominent in his sort of tank top-like style T-shirt. It looks like he's wearing a tank top, but if he was, he'd be boiling hot. Thinks about serve and volley, does Rude, but stands his ground and plays the forehand, which slightly mishit, and Jerry going to really attack it and unload on the forehand. But the forehand from Rude lands on the baseline. Drop shot from Rude brings Jerry forward. It's not a beauty, but he picks the wrong way. Rude plays the backhand into the open space, the easiest of passes, and he's level at 4 games apiece.
A normal service resumed for Rude. I think in the US, a tank top is also used to describe what we would call a vest top, or a sleeveless top. But a tank top, to you and I, children of the 1970s United Kingdom, is a knitted affair with no sleeves.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be knitted, but it's definitely a little sort of thin jumper with no sleeves.
I think if he was wearing something knitted, he'd regret that decision.
I think you're right. Well, we had last night, we were talking about the linesmen men and women, who are all wearing these lovely pale blue T-shirts or polo shirts at the moment. But it was, at one stage, there was a sort of moment where they were about to put on their yellow jumpers last night, but they one of them put them on and then they had to take them off again, and it was as if someone's in charge of jumpers and told them no, not ready yet.
Well,
and then it stayed.
We've been commenting, haven't we, here at Radio Roland Garros on how natty they look in
Very
their
nice.
jumpers, and I think it's lovely when they all look exactly the same.
Yeah.
But it's difficult if people's thermostats are slightly different. Someone
exactly.
feels cold, someone else feels warm.
Jerry at the net to put away a smash on the opening point at 4-all. He's got such heavy ground strokes, he is able to take control of some of these rallies very early on. Rude probably feels like a bit battered and bruised trying to stay in some of these rallies, but he's doing a very good job. And it's nearing the end of this match perhaps for Rude, but he's got to get over the line. He's got to take it away from Jerry, who still has the power to threaten, and of course did beat Rude in their last meeting in Geneva just a couple of weeks ago, just over a week ago. Second serve, it's a serve and volley from a long way back. Rude thinks he's made the pass, but that was an ambitious attempt because he was he's right up against the back fence hitting that return.
Yes, I mean, I think there's a question mark over whether we're seeing Casper Ruud at the level he was at this time last year. I tend to feel like he's somewhat below that, and that's not to say that he won't reach that level, because people don't tend to start out Grand Slam campaigns playing as well as they are by the end of them.
I think his inner belief is not at the level it was last year, but it's coming because he's improving. He played better in Madrid and Rome than he had the rest of the year, and he's played much, much better here as the tournament has gone and Jerry goes long. It's 30-15, and the more wins he gets in the bag, the more you can rely on that feeling of when you step on court, you're going to play well. You might not win, but you might not. At least your base level is high.
Yes, and players will always tell you that when they come back to a tournament where they played well the previous year or they played well in the past, it gives them an extra boost because it feels very normal to win here. You feel comfortable. You like the surroundings because you have good memories of them.
Yeah, because it's sort of a funny dynamic, isn't it? That you don't play here for the rest of the year. Like normal sort of recreational players play at the same club most of the time. And so you get used to everything. And here you might play one match a year, and it's not like golf. You don't come and practice here in between time. As Jerry serves the backhand from Rude, lands on the baseline. He mishit it, but it was in. There's a drop shot from Rude, brings Jerry forward. It's too easy for him. It wasn't a good drop shot. Jerry spotted it anyway, and he puts the forehand away. couple of game points.
40-15.
Well, a hold here just puts the scoreboard pressure back on Casper Ruud. Would leave him serving to stay in this third set.
That's what he needs. He needs to put some extra pressure on Ruud. Ruud trying to serve on the angle. Puts it in the net, about halfway up. Just looking at the doubles from that 1988 Olympic final. Pam Shriver actually won it with Zina Garrison. And she beat they beat Jana Novotná and Helena Suková. Very good win. A couple of very good players there. And Sharry slices the ball up the line. Ruud does really well to dig it out. And then Sharry goes big with a forehand that's just long. And actually, Graf and Coda Kilsch, Claudia Coda Kilsch, shared the bronze back then with Elizabeth Smiley and Wendy Turnbull of Australia. That's a good question. Who did Miloslav Mičić beat in the final of the men's singles in 88? Somebody who I remember in my youth as a sort of perennial quarter-finalist at Wimbledon in the men's singles. Sharry serves. Into the net. Ball boy whips across, puts his knee back down on the little patch that they have by the side of the court to stop their knees from cutting. Kick serve from Jarry is returned on the backhand by Ruud. Jarry goes after it down the line, but he puts it straight into the net. I'll give you the answer. It's Tim Mayotte. Well, I always think
I was going to put it out to the listeners.
It's all right. There are more. There's more questions.
Well, they're very busy thinking of all the not very good prizes they might have won.
Yes, exactly.
Tweet us at radio_RG. Email us, frenchopenradio@fft.fr. We'll take your pizza toppings. We won't take them if they're seafood or chicken, obviously.
Serve and volley from Sharry. Good first volley. He should put the smash away, and he does. Good stretch on the forehand volley from Sharry off a decent return. Yeah, it's quite interesting. So Steffi Graf beat Gabriela Sabatini in the final. Sabatini is here this year at Roland Garros with Gisela Dulko in the Legends doubles. We have a Legends media access hour today. Very much hoping that Gabriela will be there because it's really nice to see her back in the tennis arena. She hasn't been around for a while, but she still looks great. It looks like she's been playing every day. In fantastic shape, and great to see her playing here with Gisela Dulko, who obviously didn't quit that long ago. Game point to Jarry. He's got a short forehand to attack. He goes down the line. Ruud's not going to make that. He can't get across to it in time. And the Chilean punches the air with his fist. Strides to his chair. He sits down. A game away from the third set, potentially. 5-4, he leads.
Fabulous doubles player, Gisela Dulko. I mean, good at singles as well, but had a particularly good doubles career. Caleb has emailed, and well, I'm going to enjoy this, I think, because the subject line is horrid prizes. Hello from Singapore. In my secondary school, they were very into rugby. It was all about my school and what my school was good at, and they made my class split up and play full contact sevens rugby in our PE lessons for the whole term. So PE is physical education. And sevens is seven-a-side rugby, if you're not familiar with the sport. My class, to be clear, was the geek class. Glasses and books and no one on the school rugby team. The winning group of us, brackets, not my group, got new mouthguards. Needless to say, after that term, those mouthguards were never used again.
That is a crackingly bad answer. I mean, question, prize.
I mean, you can see the logic, can't you? Yeah, but if you're organising a rugby sevens tournament, you would give out mouthguards, but...
Absolutely.
I mean, do you think they all played chess in mouthguards for the following term?
It's a dangerous game, chess. Lots happens. I was just looking again at the 88 Olympics. Miloslav Mičić was such a great player to watch, actually. Amazing disguise. He beat Tim Mayotte in the final, and the bronze medalists were Stefan Edberg and Brad Gilbert. So that was, nowadays they play the bronze medal match, and so anyone gets it. I quite like that they both get bronzes. I like that. You know, you've been in a semi-final trying to get to the gold medal match. I feel like you should both get a bronze because I think that would be fair. I wouldn't mind that.
Just logistically, it's a lot of people to put on a podium.
It's not that difficult. One extra person standing on a podium.
Well, the podium's a standard size. You've got to fit four people.
They can squeeze up. I think if it was for the benefit of actually getting a medal, they'd squeeze up a bit closer.
I'm all about the detail, Simon. All about the detail.
And as I said, Pam Shriver and Zina Garrison beat Yana Novotná and Helena Suková. Liz Smiley and Wendy Turnbull and Steffi Graf and Claudia Kota-Kilsch won the bronze. And in the men's doubles, that awesome team for a while of Ken Flack and Robert Scuso beat Emilio Sanchez and Sergio Casal with Matias and Milan Schreiber and Stefan Edberg and Anders Jarrett, another excellent pairing, getting the bronze.
And then Sanchez and Casal went on to create a very famous tennis academy together.
Did.
Which produced a lot of fantastic players, or at least had a lot of fantastic players through its doors. Svetlana Kuznetsova.
Whoa, blistering return by Nicholas Jarry at 30 love down.
On the gun.
It's basically a flat return bullet inside out. Andy Murray spent some time at the Casal Sanchez Academy. In Spain, a lot of ex-players now have academies, don't they? Rafael Nadal, Juan Carlos Ferreira, Gallo Blanco. It's a big business out there. Ruud serving at 30-15, serving to stay in this third set at 4-5, and Jarry thumping ground strokes as he usually does, with his pink shoes flying around the court as he thumps another forehand cross court. It's a clean winner. This is danger time for Casper Ruud.
3 hours and 5 minutes in, and you feel like the next couple of exchanges could have a huge bearing on this match. Lots of pressure. Right,
it's been
for Casper Ruud.
Anyway, it's two Merci. Sets to love to Ruud, to Giroud at 4-5, and it's been going 3 hours 5 minutes. It's been tight. Ruud serves down the middle. Jarry's return is long. Freebie for Casper Ruud off a decent serve, as was said.
I understand going on the attack on the return of serve, but you feel that Jarry just went for a little bit too much. Some of it, as you say, is credit to the serve he was trying to return.
Yeah, I don't even think he was going for it as such, just looking for depth. Massive serve from Casper Ruud. Ace for the Norwegian. 210 kilometres an hour. It's about 130 miles an hour. That was well-timed by Ruud in terms of the timing of the set, because it's given him a 5-all scoreline.
Well, there was a little ember of hope, wasn't there, for Nicholas Jarry there, and Casper Ruud did a good job of just pouring very cold water on it.
Exactly. A look at the 1984 Olympics now, which was the time that tennis came back into the Olympic Games as a demonstration sport. I think I'm right in saying it had been out of game since 1928. Jarry goes long with a forehand on the first point of this game. It was won, as we know, by Steffi Graf. But I would never, ever have remembered who she beat in the final. That's a good question. Who did Steffi beat in the final? Pam, you can answer this, obviously. In 1988, in the final of the women's singles at the Los Angeles Olympics. I'm very much looking forward to Los Angeles having the Olympics again in 5 years' time, by the way. As Jarry serves at love 15, it'll make it 15-all, thanks to the big forehand.
It wasn't Pam, was it? Because that could upset her.
No. Kansas. I wouldn't do that to Pam.
Good. Just checking.
It was a player. I've honestly...
Because, you know, if it's you or Pam, we're keeping Pam.
Yeah, fair enough. Sonny says, I got to play in the US team trials for the 1984 Olympics. Not long, but a huge thrill. Got a small radio as a prize in juniors once, and it was very, very useful. But see, that's something. That's a good prize.
That's a really good prize.
That encourages you. Polystyrene Cup does not. I never played the county championships again. Sherry serves at 15-all. That's just because I wasn't good enough. Never mind. Backhand goes long from the Chile, then it's 15-13. Mixed in with the brilliance of Jarry are some quite sort of routine misses. Terry's back on the pizza. Good morning from Maryland, US, radio_RG. Historically, the most divisive pizza topping is pineapple. What say you, Lady E? 15-30, Jarry serving. You can have some time to think about that. misses with the first serve. It's taking a bit of pace off that one. Just looking for the angle down the tee. Misses. Now, very deliberate service action. Big second serve to the backhand of Ruud, who's standing really deep and running across to his forehand to hit the running forehand. He has to run, but he doesn't have to run much because the forehand from Xiaoyi is miles out of court. And having had that chance in the last game, almost a half chance to get the set in the bag, he is facing two break points now.
We thought this little passage of play would dictate the match. It might finish the match if Ruud can get a break here and leave himself serving for a straight sets win. But that straight sets scoreline really belies what a tough match it's been for the Norwegian.
Missed the first serve. Second serve to come. To the backhand of Ruud, pretty high up on his racket as he tries to get it back into play, but it's decent. Ruud plays the backhand straight down the middle. Xiaoyi thumps a forehand to the forehand of Ruud, who gets it back just onto the baseline. It drops just in. The backhand from Xiaoyi is living a little bit dangerously as he goes close to the lines, and Ruud punches a backhand long. That's the first of the two break points saved. What was your pineapple experience?
So many to mention. I'm not a huge fan of fruit and savoury things together.
Oh, yes. Oh, really? Cheese and grapes?
I might make an exception for cheese and grapes.
With grape and scissors.
Or cheese and dates, obviously with grape scissors. I'm not a savage.
Big serve from Xiaoyi to the backhand of Ruud. Oh, he goes back behind Ruud, but Ruud stands his ground. He's there. He's got a chance on a forehand pass. Backhand volley from Xiaoyi's good. Backhand pass from Ruud is wide. Inches away from going up a break in this 40. Set. That was pretty close.
Wasn't far off, was it?
Well, he read the big hit from Xiaoyi in the middle, but he almost pulled off that backhand pass. But Jerry's a big guy to pass at the net. It's a big target. He's got a big wingspan, and he's back to juice. First serve was right on the service line. Ruud is back up to the baseline now as gets into position in the back end of the net from Xiaoyi. He just can't find the real consistency that he needs to be able to punch holes in this defence of Casper Ruud.
Well, he's not the first player to find that a problem.
That is true. Six of them found that last year. And even Nadal in the final didn't have it all his own way. Break point number three for Casper Ruud in this game. 5-5 in the third. Two sets to love up. Xiaoyi serves again to the backhand of Ruud. He's got a forehand mid-court. He hits it hard, short. Ruud gets it back, but he's not going to get that back because that ball is hit dead flat. And it lands about halfway up the service box, but on the angle, Ruud just watches it sail past.
Dead flat and dead hard.
Dead hard. Well dead hard. Good response from Xiaoyi. Said he's making errors, but he's not going to die wondering. He is going after every single shot he can. Holger Rune 4-1, 4-2 up on Francisco Cerúndolo. That serve was long. It was on the sideline. The ball bounces off the side of the fence onto the door, and then a man picks it up behind the ball boy. Forehand return from Casper Ruud on the angle, pulls it out wide. Oh! Xiaoyi tried to absolutely leather it up the line. He did leather it, but it was just long. It was an all or nothing shot. Ended up being nothing.
Well, I think he realises that if you get into a long, protracted rally with Casper Ruud, that he's probably going to try and wear you down. And Xiaoyi just a much more attacking player at the moment. And that's sometimes paying dividends, and sometimes it's causing him to just overhit in big moments.
It's the way he's got back into this match after all, so you can't blame him. So again, he's served on the ad court. He's served to the Casper Ruud backhand every single point in this game. But now he's got a second serve. Oh, is it a double fault? It was very close to the sideline. Ooh, the umpire, he says it's good. He's very quickly down. I think Casper Ruud also thought it was good. Good. And now Jarry's having a conversation with the umpire.
I think he did, yeah.
That's an excellent conversation. Jarry trying to say to the umpire, it didn't affect Ruud's return, which didn't go in the court. It didn't affect it, didn't affect it, didn't affect. Do you think it affected? Yes. Okay.
It's very polite, isn't
it? It was, yeah.
Very polite, somewhat persistent.
So they're going to replay the point. I mean, Jarry wanted the point to be given to him. He thought that Ruud missed the return anyway, but it hit the line. It was a little bit unfortunate for Jarry, and it's still break point Casper Ruud. Serves. Again out wide onto the sideline. High, high, high return from Casper Ruud. It's a bounce smash. Jarry sort of carves it into the court again. Doesn't go fully after it. Backhand cross court from the Chilean is sliced back by Ruud. Inside out forehand from Jarry is big. The ball floating from Ruud. It lands in. Oh, and Jarry just totally shanks the ball almost into the stands. And that is a really disappointing way for him to end his service game because he's been broken. And Casper Ruud will serve for this match at 6-5.
Very, very odd shot from Nicholas Jarry. Do you think there was a slightly odd bounce there? That
I think he was trying to hit the inside in forehand as hard as he possibly could, and he just mishit it. Would have taken his eye off it slightly. I don't think it was a bounce issue.
He had a lot of time, and sometimes, as all tennis players know,
because it was a kick, as you said.
Yeah. That but can it be unhelpful, so having too much time. He's arguing away with the umpire now, just trying to retrace his steps, argue that he should have just been given that point. It's an entirely pointless conversation.
It's his frustration, isn't it, being broken. It's the scoreline, it's the situation in the match. He's had a great Roland Garros, and now here he is, a game away from defeat, and it's on the Ruud serve, and he's just frustrated. Pam Shriver says, you had to be 21 and under to play in the 84 Olympics, so I was 6 months too old. I can't recall without Googling who lost to Graf, or maybe Andrea Jaeger. That's not a bad guess, but not quite right. Tim says, Steffi's opponent in LA, was it Zena Garrison? Listening in the garden in Taunton, the summer side, he says. A stone's throw from the Glastonbury Festival.
Elle says, try pineapple and onion. It sounds like a weird combination. Yes, it does. But trust me, it's delicious.
Yeah, I mean, it's sweet and sour, isn't it? But I'm not so sure I'll be trying that later on. As Ruud starts his service game. Just to put you out of your misery on the Olympic finalist, a runner-up in 84 to Steffi Graf, it was Sabrina Goles from... let's see, from Yugoslavia, I think, at the time. Yeah. What was Yugoslavia? Lost in the final to Steffi Graf.
So she was so nearly golden goalers.
Exactly. Ruud, ooh, a little tight on the forehand on the second point. Just pushes the forehand into the tram lines. It's back to 15-all. The bronze was won by Rafaela Reggi and Catherine Tonvier. And Stefan Edberg won the men's, beat Francisco Maciel in the final, and Jimmy Arias and Paolo Carne won the doubles. How did they manage? What was going on there? It was a demonstration, wasn't it? So you can play. Looks like you can play with anyone.
If you're wondering what's going on, you're currently hearing the voices inside Simon's head.
You're lucky that it's not a terrible voice today. It's just a simple one. Ruud slices the back and into the backhand corner of Jarry, who moves quickly into position to hit the forehand. Then he hits a very flat backhand straight down the middle of the court, and then misses with the backhand just long, maybe just a tiny bit wide. And Casper Ruud moves to 30-15. He's two points away from victory. So little margin for error in some of these big hits from Jarry. Some of them are clean winners and others are mistakes, and it is difficult.
Well, that's the conundrum, isn't it? You have to go for your shots against the better players, but in going for your shots, you're also cutting down your margin for error.
Dave has come up with some very good tennis movie puns.
I can
see
them.
I'm liking this. Every time we're on together, people come back with more movie puns.
And they're very, very good, these from Dave.
We'll come to those after.
Yes, this might be slightly more important at the moment.
Up the line goes Jarry. He's just wide. And he thinks about smacking the clay with his racket. Trudges across to the forehand side to return the next ball. He is staring two match points in the face. Casper Ruud, 40-15. After 3 hours and 19 minutes of hard, hard tennis, he stands at match point. He serves the forehand of Jarry, straight back down the middle. Ruud up the line with a forehand. Now he goes backhand cross court to Jarry, runs round it, hits inside in on the forehand. Forehand down the middle from Jarry. Bouncing high on the backhand side of Casper Ruud, who launches it straight down the middle. Oh, beauty of a backhand cross court and short from Jarry. Clean winner.
He does have this sort of rather casual style, Jarry, doesn't he? Where he's a little bit like an offhand backhand.
Yes, that's very true. But it was a perfectly timed backhand winner, but it's still match point, Casper Ruud. Norwegian serves down the tee. Forehand return from Jarry. Not perfectly hit, but it's in. And Ruud on the run, on the baseline, chasing down these balls from Jarry. As Jarry moves to the forehand side, it's a good shot from Ruud. And the forehand goes long from Nicolas Jarry. And Casper Ruud is through once again to the quarterfinals of Roland Garros. With a 7-6, 7-5, 7-5 victory that took him 3 hours and 20 minutes. It was a hard match, a rough, tough match between two big hitting players who love a clay court, but it's Casper Ruud, the finalist last year, who is through to the last eight.
Casper Ruud looks very, very relieved to have come through that one unscathed. That's one of those matches where you think, oh, three sets? You didn't watch it? Pretty comfortable for Casper Ruud. It was not. It was a tough, tough battle, and he's come through and he's understandably quite delighted. Nicolas Jarry, disappointment for him, but it's been a great tournament and he's played his part in a very entertaining clay court battle here today, as he just is roundly cheered off court by a pretty full crowd here on court Philippe Chatrier
and by Casper Ruud himself, appreciative of the effort that Jarry put in. It was a bruising battle. 3 hours and 20 minutes, not overly long, but for a three-set match, quite testing. And Ruud will be happy that it didn't go to four and extend him and make him expand that extra energy that players don't want to use in the first week if they can help it, on the first week and a bit. We are, of course, into the second week now.
And while we wait for Casper Ruud to just finish what he's doing before he has a chat to Alex Correccia, let's just bring you those movie titles.
No, there's no time for it.
Maybe Casper's got some of his own, but we're going to hear from him now.
Casper, huge win, very difficult opponent. When you work hard off season, sometimes they push you so much, sometimes they tell you, come on, you can do it again. I believe after this match you feel like, okay, I understand why they pushed me. Congratulations, such a great win for you.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, it was great for me. You know, three very, very tough sets, 3 hours and 20 minutes. So if we played five sets, I don't know how long this would be. But I think today I can thank my team for pushing me every day in practice, because not every day is as fun as other days. But I do the work and I felt physically fine, physically good. I was ready for more if we had to play for more. So this is a win for not just me, but for my team as well. I think we have done great work the last couple of years. So I'm happy to be back in the quarterfinals.
Sure. And how difficult it is to play against Jarry, that he serves huge, he hits hard with the forehand, with the backhand. How important is this court? Because it's big, so you can go a little bit far back of the return, but yeah, then also the transition to get back close to the baseline.
Yes, it's difficult. I mean, his serve is great. He plays very aggressive. So I'm happy that I had enough court to work with today. This court is probably the biggest court on clay that we have. So for me, who likes to return from back, it's good. But it was tough. It's been windy this year. So on this side, you have the wind with you, so the ball stops. And here, you feel all the heaviness from the wind also. So it's a little difficult, but I think I managed to do well. I was down a break in both the second and the third, but was able to kind of think about, okay, let's see if we are on the right side, if I can break, and I was able to stay in and very happy to neutralize a little bit his serve and win the most important point of the match.
And to finish, of course, last year we